Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Allison in Wonderland Mental Health Podcast. As usual, we have a very amazing guest today, and I am going to let him introduce himself in typical Allison in Wonderland fashion and explain what his passion is and what has driven him to do all of the wonderful things that he's doing. So, Jerry, welcome to Allison in Wonderland.
Allison, it's great to be here. I always love talking to people from all over North America and all over the world for the most part because I'm in Canada. I'm just outside of Toronto. So we're just getting over a winter. So I always kind of relish in the fact that I can talk to people who are south of me or somewhere else in more tropical places from a weather point of view. But it's a beautiful spring day here today and the sun's shining and most of the snow's gone. So I'm happy about that. But like I said, I'm from London, Ontario, Canada. It's just an hour and a half outside of Toronto. And my journey in life, why I'm doing what I am today, happened just by accident. I was in the financial services industry for the majority of my life. Got out of that around 2014. And when the pandemic set in a few years later, my wife and I just had no idea what we're going to do with the rest of our lives. And so what I ended up doing was taking some time to kind of retool my own life. And during that time, my oldest son, who's 30 years old, Thomas, he's profoundly deaf and he's autistic. He operates academically at a grade one, grade two level. He did an incredible thing in his life. He accomplished a goal that nobody thought possible. And when he accomplished that goal, I actually wrote a short story about it and published it. And the story actually caught on and was started being sold and read around the world, and people wanted to talk to me more about it. And after, talking to people and experiencing what he did, I actually decided that this became my new mission in life. That going forward, I was going to spend the rest of my life sharing his story, offering hope and opportunity to other people who could actually be inspired by his story. And as a result of that incredible thing that happened in our lives, I started an academy called the New Millennial Success Academy that's helping people reach goals and change the quality of their life. So it's been an incredible ride for the last 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing how we can spend so much of our lives doing like this job that we're like, okay, this is what I'm doing. And then just something happens and you're like, wow, that's not really my passion. This is my passion. So you're oldest and you have a few children. So he was diagnosed as a baby with being as being deaf. And so I'm guessing really, I have no idea what that's like, what raising a child that is deaf would be like. So, I mean, my son and I were talking the other day about he checked out a book on sign language in the library, and I was like, surely there's an app. I've always told everyone that if I learned a second language, sign language is the one I'd like to learn because it's just so beautiful. But it does. It seems like that it changes your whole world. So I'm
It
guessing that's.
really was. And just to give you a little background on it, my wife and I were childhood sweethearts, and we ended up when we got married, she was 25 and I was 27. And as soon as we got married, my wife, I decided we're going to start a family. And a few months into my wife's pregnancy, we found out she was carrying twins. So we were pretty excited about that. Well, everybody else except me, because I was self-employed and I wasn't getting one, I was getting two kids. And so 6 months into the pregnancy, though, my wife experienced some problems, challenges. And she went into the hospital, and both the babies were under incredible stress. And so they had to perform an emergency C-section. And one of our sons, he died. He just couldn't make it through. And my son Thomas was born at 27 weeks. He was 2 pounds, 5 ounces. And
Goodness.
the probability of him even surviving that was next to nil. So that's how we started out this ideal life we had. And so he spent 10 weeks in the neonatal intensive care unit in St. Joe's Hospital here in London. And he thrived right away, though. There was this burning desire in this little tiny baby that we were able to take him home at 10 weeks. And my wife and I finally got a chance to start our family. And so things were wonderful for a while. And then we noticed he wasn't reacting to certain things if they crashed on the floor or dropped that. And so we had him tested and we found out that he was profoundly deaf. And as a father, you have these dreams for your kids, especially a boy in that. And so I didn't know how to react to it. I didn't know anybody who was deaf, and I didn't know how was he going to get a job, how he's going to work, how he's going to do all this stuff. But my wife is an incredibly strong, powerful woman, and she's the type of lady that makes no excuses and she takes none. And so she grabbed the bull by the horns and she started figuring out how we were going to do this. And so she got Thomas involved with programs right away. And he was starting to thrive. He got some hearing aids for the little bit of residual hearing he had left. But around 18 months, he started exhibiting other types of characteristics that we didn't have other kids. So we thought they were just cute. But people that had other kids said, you might want to have them looked at because there's things that were kind of peculiar that we might want to look at. So we had him tested and we found out that he was exhibiting autistic tendencies and anywhere between a mild to severe level. And so when he was diagnosed like that as a dad, I just threw my hands in the air and I said, what's going on here? But again, my wife stepped in and says, well, these are the cards we're dealt. We're not going to make excuses. This is our son. This is what we always dreamed of. So we're going to make this happen. So again, this is before Google and this is before mobile phones and all that. My wife was on the phone daily calling people, driving to countless assessments and appointments and just putting everything in place. And we had a local deaf school in the city of London where I'm from. And so we just got the ball rolling and we met some incredible people and he started to thrive. And he was doing well and he was our little boy and it was just absolutely wonderful. And to normalize his life, my wife and I, we went ahead and had three more children for the next few years. Because we, you know what, nothing can normalize a family more than just having a bunch of kids. And it was a loving environment in that. And so and then he went to the local deaf school and got special training for the autism and that. And him along with the other kids, we for the most part had a really nice, fun upbringing in the house. Now there was challenges we had, like from a sign language point of view, my wife and I had to learn sign language, and his younger brothers and sister had to learn it as well too. But that kind of made us unique because we could be in a crowded room and we could communicate and that, and nobody will play charades with my wife and I, or we have to be on separate teams. But no, it's for the most part it was good. And but the as a father thinking what kind of job or what kind of career and that he would have, yeah, that was always something on the back of my mind. But the more and more people I met who were experiencing the same type of thing, and I always tell people that if you're going through a crisis, you have a tendency to feel like it's just you going through this. And if you reach out, there were a lot of support groups, and we met a lot of great parents in the deaf community, and we met some people in the autism community. Most people have one or the other, but with my son having the dual diagnosis, it was a little bit more compounding that way. But because of my wife and the great people we had around us, he was able to thrive. And he's not only had a great upbringing, but he enjoys a great life today.
It's amazing. And I'm thinking like 28 years ago, nobody was even talking about autism 28 years ago.
No.
Like people didn't even have peanut allergies 28 years ago. This was not one of those things that, I mean, also there's not an online community. I was talking to someone earlier today and I was like, when there weren't apps for these things, there wasn't the
No.
internet. When I became a mom, my phone didn't even have a camera on it. So like you're
Right.
I'm sitting there with my 35 millimeter camera taking pictures of babies,
Yeah.
So it's so amazing everything that your wife was able to accomplish.
Yeah.
People now are like probably thinking, oh, well, there's all of these resources, but you have to think it's almost like a whole different world. I sometimes talk about, like 30 years ago, or like when I was growing up, or when my kids were babies, it's almost as if now we're in like a futuristic society, and then it's kind of like a parallel universe because people
Yeah.
that have grown up with the internet being what it is, and all of this social connection, really might have a hard time understanding how difficult those things were 30 years ago.
Especially when you're starting from scratch, like trying to find a needle in a haystack, because like I said, the deafness was one thing, but the autism side, because like you said, we didn't really talk about it. And the only association I ever had with autism, if I'd see it on TV, you'd always see this young child who was like to themselves in a corner, who was almost like in this catatonic state.
Yeah.
Who would flash out from a violent point of view once in a while. And that's all we knew. And like I said, like you said, there was no social media, there was no really online resources. And it was a matter of us, you know, going to the appointments and not even knowing if there was any funding or if there's any resources. And the funny thing about a mobile phone, my wife would leave London and go to Toronto, which was an hour and a half away. You know, in traffic, it could take up to 2 to 3 hours. And so we didn't even have a mobile phone. So I had to get one of those things with a great big bag in it. And there was a phone with a cable. And I'm telling you, it was $3 a minute. So, you know, we just had it. So if something were to happen on the side of the road, a breakdown, that my wife could call. So yeah, everything, when you look back, it was just absolutely crazy. But you know, you make it work because you didn't know any different at the time, right? But yeah, from a resource point of view, I think with advantage that we didn't have things at our fingertips, because it really made us, or forced us, to have to go out and find the different resources and meet all the different people. So, but again, I'm going to attribute 99% of this because I was building a business in the financial services industry during this time.
Right. You were supporting the family in one way, and your wife was doing the hard work.
it's really funny. It's times through adversity and times like that you don't develop character, but your character gets revealed. And I knew my wife was always strong, and she was a really, you know, tough gal. But to see how she just took what most people would crumble under, and because of this, our other kids are incredibly strong young adults, and Thomas has done so well, and it's just shaped the whole character of our family based on this entire situation.
Well, and I mean, and it was, you also, I mean, she lost a baby that she had carried for 6 months, and I'm sure the hormones and everything postpartum could have been very difficult. It's a lot. I tell people sometimes, I feel like I'm winning if I took a shower today. Like, cool. You know what I mean? Like, some days that's it, but that's one of those things where it's like, she got up and she, you know, went past the, she grieved and took care of her baby. And then y'all probably both grieved for the thought that the life that you thought Thomas was going to have, but just kept rolling with it. And it's really amazing, because I think that, you know, my mother always told me the story of when my aunt, when they was diagnosed with being deaf, and for years before she was diagnosed, and this was probably 60 years ago. So imagine what, you know, the times were then, that my grandparents just thought she was bad. So she just got extra whippings and things like that. And then even then, when she was diagnosed, it was more that it was kind of shameful on their family that they didn't talk about it. And, so my mom, none of them were raised to know sign language. It was one of those things. So I think it takes a lot to really just rise to that occasion. And I have a really hard time understanding the concepts that my mom would talk about when she grew up, because you talk about mama bears, and I am the fiercest of them. And it sounds like your wife is too. And everybody's Absolutely. Like, oh, you don't mess with a mama bear. But when you meet a woman that really, really is a mama bear, there's no stopping her. And it's just so amazing. And it sounds like y'all have built this great family. And then I said, what drives you? So really, Thomas's desire that you wrote is really what drives you. And people are going to get the pun in a minute.
And you know what? That's exactly it. Because, you know, when these things happen in our life, these catastrophic things that we experience, we try to put rhyme and reason, like, why is this happening? Like, it doesn't make sense. It's not fair. All our friends who were getting married were having perfectly healthy children and that. But you know what's funny is that when you get to a certain point in your life and you turn around and look, then all the dots kind of line up. And that's exactly what happened with Thomas. And what led me to write this story about Thomas was when his the brother that's just a couple years younger than him got his driver's license. We were really concerned because Thomas always wanted to buy a car and he wanted to get a driver's license. And we were really concerned that when our son Jake got his driver's license, Thomas was going to be really upset because he wants to drive, but we knew it just wouldn't be possible because not only because of the autism, but academically, I operated at a grade 1-2 level. And to get your driver's license, there's the reading test and the test that you have to take. And we just knew that wouldn't be possible for him. So for about a year, we hid the fact that Jake was driving so Thomas wouldn't feel less of himself.
Right.
And then, but then he was resilient. And a funny story, I don't include this in the story that I wrote, but Thomas came out through our gate once into our driveway and he saw Jake sitting in the passenger seat of the car, our driver's seat of the car. And the look on his face of surprise, but almost disappointment, it was heartbreaking. And so he got very persistent with my wife and I, says, I want to get a license. I want to own a car. And so my wife and I were always, we'd lay in bed and say, how can he do this? Like, we were always accommodated our kids, you know, for the right things they wanted in their lives. And we just knew that we were failing Thomas here, that it's one of the times where we're going to have to say no to this incredible desire he has in his life to feel normal. And so he kept pushing. He didn't care what we thought, though. He kept pushing. So my wife and I are laying in bed one night, and my wife says, let's just go for it. And if somebody's going to say no to him, it will be the ministry saying, look, you can't get a driver's license, so it won't be us.
Right.
And I will tell you, Allison, some people call it the universe. I choose to call it God. But when things start lining up in your life, when you really want to make things happen, it is absolutely phenomenal. So we went on this journey. He wanted to buy a car and he wanted to get a driver's license. So we started making calls and reaching out to people. And it was amazing how things started lining up. And we started talking to people. And we met this person who heard about what Thomas wanted to do. He was a deaf individual himself, but he just immigrated to Canada from Lebanon. And he was a pathologist over there. And he was coming to Canada to get his PhD at the local university. And he heard that Thomas wanted to get a driver's license. So we talked to him and said, here's the deal. He's not only deaf, he's autistic. And he said, we'll give it a go. So this, because we had to get the first license, which is called a G1, and it's just a written test.
And once I think in the States, that's considered like your permit where you can drive with your parents in the car.
Yeah, you
right?
have to have somebody in the passenger seat. But it's the written part. And we knew this was going to be really challenging for Thomas. But this guy said, let's give it a go. So we told Thomas, he was excited. We laid out a plan and a whole bunch of different things of how he's going to have to meet twice a week with this gentleman for 3-hour sessions at the local library. And so he would meet with him. And after about a month or two, there was just no progress being made whatsoever. And we were getting discouraged. Thomas wasn't, because he figured if I just kept showing up, eventually I'm going to get a license.
Right.
But an incredible thing happened after about a month and a half, 2 months. The fellow he was working with started identifying learning patterns in Thomas, ways he could learn that nobody had seen before, the doctors, the specialists, his teachers. And so this gentleman started figuring out how Thomas learned. And he started sort of like redoing the whole training with them. And within about a month, Thomas started getting this stuff and he was able to memorize the questions and the information and do all this stuff. And within about 6 weeks, he was scoring 75% plus on all the mock exams. And 75 is the threshold to pass it. And so after 5 months, he went and wrote the test. And he scored 38 out of 40 on one half and then 39 out of 40 on the other half. And he beat his other brothers and sisters, the scores that they got. And we couldn't believe it. We were so excited. And Thomas was excited, but not so excited about that he passed. But he just felt it was, I'm going to get it. He just truly wanted and believed this thing. And so for the next few months after that, my wife, one of us, each night sat in the passenger seat and he would drive for 2 or 3 hours in our car. We would go to a mall parking lot and he'd go in and out of, you know, cars and stuff, just learning how to back up, drive forward, eventually progress to the city streets and then went out onto the county roads. And the look on his face when he was driving, Allison, was just absolutely phenomenal. Like, this kid had been liberated in his life, and it just, it just changed his entire perspective and hope in life because he was able to accomplish a goal that nobody thought possible.
Well, and it's this normal rite of passage that we take for granted. I'm not sure what the ages are, but here when you're 15, you can get your learner's permit. When you're 16, you can get a driver's license. I think some states may be different, but I think that's pretty much the average in America. But it is, it's that rite of passage. But what I think is interesting is my motor skills and my depth perception are not great. So I aced the written exam, and my older brother and I went at the same time because my dad had to take off work and take us, and he was 2 years older than me, but we both went. He failed the written exam, retook it and got it. But then when it, that was when it was time for me to get my permit, but he also got his driver's license that same day. I failed my driver's test 3 times because I can't back up straight, like down a road. Yeah. There are just things that I struggle with. And so I drive as little as possible. Yeah. years ago, I was like, if I'm ever rich, I'm going to hire a personal driver. And then they came out with Uber and Lyft. And I'm like, wow, if I'm ever rich enough, then I'll just get a Lyft everywhere. But it is a rite of passage. It was when I was able to drive, it was good because I could work and I needed to work. And, you know, not everyone when they're 16 needs to work, but I needed to work. It's really amazing. And people can call it the universe or God or, you know, however, you know, I always tell people that like, I believe in God, but it's okay if you don't believe in God, just like you can send me prayers or good vibes, positive energy, whatever you believe in. I'll take all the happy vibes you want to send.
Yeah. We joked at the fact that we sent a lot of knee mail because we were on our knees a lot right during this thing. But, you know, so when he got that part of the license, it was great. And we were just so relieved. And then about a year later, he says, all right, I don't want you guys in the car anymore. I want to get my G2. And this will allow me to drive all by myself and buy my car.
And that's terrifying for parents normally, not even when there's all these. I mean, like, it was terrifying for me when my kids started driving on their own.
Well, exactly. So, but we had a hard time finding somebody who could communicate with them so he could drive a car, learn how to drive a car. Like we had taught him, but you know, moms and dad, you know, we're there just to make sure he doesn't crash. But there's certain other rules of backing up and parallel parking that we didn't do any of that stuff because we can't even do it ourselves. But anyways, we found somebody again, and again, we couldn't find anybody. There was no programs in place, none of this stuff. And then somebody reached out and says, "We heard. I know you'd been calling around. We heard we got a fellow who can't sign, but he's worked with that person before in the past, and he will know how to convey the right information." So then Thomas went out with them, and in driver's ed in Canada, you have to go out on 10 1-half-hour sessions. Well, Thomas went out at about 40 of them, but this guy taught him. And then I think it was in February of 2020.
Right before everything fell apart.
Yeah, before everything fell apart. Or no, it was actually the year before that, I should say. Thomas went and aced his driving test, backing up, parallel parking and everything. And so we were just so excited. And during this time, Allison, we told him that if he wanted to buy a car, I'm not buying it for him. So every month he'd take a couple $100 out of his bank account, put it in a lockbox underneath his bed. Because I said, you're going to need about $7,000. So he saved up over $7,000. He got his G2 so he could drive by himself. And we went, we bought a car and he bought a Subaru Outback, got it all insured. And this kid, I'll tell you, you could win the Powerball $700 million lottery and you wouldn't be as happy as this kid was on the day he got that. So he was just incredibly excited. And in Canada, then you have to do another one. It's called the G, where you drive on the freeways and stuff. He was able to get that. But the big one was the G2, so he could drive by himself. And when that happened, I was so excited for him and I was so amazed, but I realized there was something else playing in the back of my mind saying, how did he actually do this? Nobody believed he could do it, but he did. I said, so what happened there at that point? So I wrote a little story. It's a short story. It's called Thomas's Desire. And it's about a 20 minute read. It's about 4,000 words. And I just wanted to have a recollection of what he did. So say 10, 20 years from now, his brothers and his sister and our family members could look back and really appreciate what it was he did. So I wrote this cool little story about what he did and the steps he took. And I had a friend of mine, a former English teacher, edit it for me. And he calls me and he says, man, he goes, Jerry, you got something here. And I go, what do you mean? He goes, like, this is TED Talk kind of stuff. And I'm going, Steve, I'm a terrible writer. He goes, yes, you're a terrible writer, but it's the story. He goes, and we're just in the midst of COVID now. You know, when I wrote this story, he goes, and there was a lot of hopelessness in the world. He says, man, people need to hear this. So we just self-published it and we put it online for $5. And within 2 weeks, it was being sold and read around the world. And people were inspired by the story and people were reaching out to me to do interviews and wanted to know more about what Thomas did. And I sat back one day and I went, you know what? I've been looking for something that really would fire my belly every day, that get me out of bed and want to do this. And it became my mission at that point there to share Thomas's story and inspire people to say, look, let my son, this deaf, autistic young man, who from the outside looking in, they're not given a lot of credit. And they're sort of like the least of us. A lot of people consider them. Well, he went out and climbed a Mount Everest, something nobody thought possible. And if he was able to do that, let his story inspire other people to make their goals and dreams come true. And like I said, as a result of that, I started my Success Academy, and I'm out there and I have a keynote address when I talk to people. It's called Win, Even When Nobody Else Thinks You Can. And I talk about what my son does, and I get nothing less. And it's not, there's no light on me. I'm just the messenger here.
Right.
It's what my son accomplished that has really inspired people. And so I love getting together with folks and talking to them. And then it doesn't make a difference where people are in their life, that you're never too old. I'm 58 years old again. And I started a brand new venture at 55 years old.
Yeah, we're all, I mean, it seems like we reinvent ourselves a lot more now than generations ago did, where, you know, like my granddad had one job his entire life, well, was in the army and then had, a job. Like those were the, so it's interesting now how people tend to reinvent themselves so often, but then it's hard. You get those hangups where it's like, well, I'm already this far in my career and I've got to do this. I'm going through it now. I'm in my empty nest phase and I've spent 20 years in marketing, but I'm focusing on mental health, which is my passion. But it's a little difficult to take that leap to leave that executive level position and finally do what I said I was going to do that I was passionate about. And it's really interesting that you've kind of taken this correlation of the success process that you kind of had in your mind before, and then what worked for Thomas, and turned that into a guide for people to kind of make those changes. And it's interesting to me because I heard someone say, and I don't know if I was watching a TV show or listening to a podcast, so there's no way to quote where this came from, but somehow in the last week, I heard someone say, I don't know who decided to tell everybody that they could be whatever they want to be when they grow up, but it's created these entitled people. And I was just like, well, don't you want, like when your kid's a child, they can be anything they want to be when they grow up, but they have to want it and fight for it. And I think that I even kind of, when I heard it, was thinking, maybe they're right. Maybe we shouldn't tell kids. But now you're really kind of making me go back to where my thought process was before, where it's like, you can do whatever, you just have to fight for it.
Yeah. I look at it this way here. Like people say, like, Jerry, you can't be whatever you want. And I say, look, there's two things. You're right. You have to be in harmony with the laws of our universe and the laws of nature.
I can't be a unicorn.
I can't be a 7'2" NBA basketball player. I'm 5'10", so I have to be realistic. But here's the way I look at it. If there's somebody like me in the world who has already done what I want to do, then I'm perfectly capable of doing that. And so, yeah, we have to, you're right. You can't be a unicorn. let's be realistic. But you have to stay in harmony with the laws of the universe and laws of nature. But if somebody else has done it, you can do it too, and even do it better. And that was the one thing I found about it. If you don't mind me, I'll just tell you what really came out of this and something I can really share with your listeners today that they can start using. Because I found when Thomas became successful in this venture, it really confused me. It took me back a couple steps because I grew up and I was told that if you work hard, you get a good education. You're somewhat gregarious, outgoing, maybe you're very competitive. And I fit into those categories. So when I had success in my own personal life, it just all made sense. But when Thomas became successful in what he did, he didn't fit into my definition. So I really truly had to look back and say, okay, I need to redefine my definition of what success is and how someone needs to go out and become successful. So what I did, Allison, very simply, is I took what Thomas did, and I took the key elements, the steps that we took. And then I took my knowledge over the years, my template, and I laid it on top of Thomas's. And then I took all the information that my mentors and business partners over the years, what we knew about success, and I laid it on top of all that. And I used Thomas as a reference point. And you know what I found? It was that there was eight really key commonalities that came through all these things. Then I'll share those in a second. But at the end of this whole process, and it took me about 6 months, there were two glaring conclusions that came out. And these are things that if people think about these and use them, it can totally transform their thought process to become successful. And the first thing I found was, number one, was that success is structural, it's not personal. And what I mean by this, we've all looked at that one or two people and say, of course they're successful. Look at them. They look good. They come from the right families. They have money. They got the million-dollar hairdo. They just got everything. Of course they're going to become successful. And so we always put our success on other people. But what I found after what Thomas did is that success has an actual mental structure in the brain. That if you understand the structural aspects of your mind and how to set those up in a systematic way, you can become successful. And so there was actual success structure that anybody can develop. And the key with Thomas was doesn't rely on our primary senses. We don't need to hear, we don't have to see, we don't have to smell, taste, or touch. These are those higher faculties that we all have inside of us. And so that was the first thing. And then the second thing that was incredible is that systems are more important than individual skills. That if somebody has a system to follow that other people have used to become successful, they will learn the skills they need to. And just a perfect example of that, if somebody were the smartest person in the world and had all the money, and they went up and opened up their own restaurant and started from scratch, the probability is they're going to fall flat in their face. But you could take an average, ordinary person like us, and they buy a McDonald's franchise and they just follow that system, there's a 99% chance that they're going to become successful.
Right,
So
because the
system.
system is in place. They're going to tell you if where you put the restaurant is okay, and they're going to tell you
Yes.
what you need to pay people for your area. And yeah, the marketing
Yeah.
is there. Everybody knows what a McDonald's is.
Yeah. And that's what it was. And so I always tell people, I said, don't reinvent the wheel. There are an incredible amount of resources out there and tools and systems in place. And I always tell people, go up to somebody who's already become successful in the area where you want to be successful, buy them lunch one day and ask them what they did and get a mentor. And I've always understood this concept. So I've always had mentors in my life, people I could reach out. I'm almost obnoxious at times because I reach out to people all the time and I want to talk to them and I'll buy them coffee, I'll buy them lunch because I'm always want to get better and find better ways of doing things. And so when I realized this, I said, look, I got to start sharing this with people because my son did that. And there's basically eight principles. Do you want me to go through them kind of quickly and I can just
Yeah.
touch on those?
Yeah, go through them. Let's.
Well, the first thing is in my son, he developed this incredible desire for what he wanted. And like there's people that say, I would like to. I said, like to and would want to is one thing. What do you need in your life? Like that desire, that one thing that you are going to regret for the rest of your life if you don't do. And it's that thing you think about all the time and focus on. And if you actually think about what you want and go through it and visualize it over and over again and create this burning desire that I cannot live without this, I have to have it. That's the first part. And that's the one thing my son did. And I can't do a deep dive on how to develop that now, but there's really good techniques that you can use. And I show people on how to develop that incredible desire. And then the second thing it's in from I'm a Christian. So we always talked about faith. And faith where I came from, it was described as the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. So it's just, you just know in the back of your mind that's going to happen. Perfect example. My kids on Christmas Eve, when they were, all of them were under 10, they knew tomorrow morning they were getting gifts. They didn't know. They just knew it was going to happen. They had faith beyond a shadow of a doubt that was going to happen. And that was Thomas's what. So when Thomas was studying for this thing, it wasn't if I was going to do it. He already visualized having that car. He had the driver's license in his wallet, and he had the keys in his hands even before it came to fruition. He had that belief. And again, we have to get to the point, and we train people on how to develop that. And then the third point was developing that positive self-talk, because most people do talk to themselves on a daily basis.
You need expert opinions sometimes.
Yeah, and you know the problem is, our most people, 90% of our self-talk is negative, criticizing ourselves. Why did I do this? Why did I do that? And it's really important from the mental structure point of view to feed yourself, feed your mind positive impact, you know, through affirmations, declarations, whatever it was. And Thomas was doing this all the time because he was on the computer looking at the Auto Trader, looking at the car he was going to do. And I'll tell you something, Allison, he was always visualizing. You know how you can go on Google Earth, right? Mm-hmm. His computer has a 27-inch screen. So when he's right in front of it, it's just everything's there. He would go on Google Earth on the street view, and he would just keep clicking on it and be, yeah. And he was mapping out where he was going in this car, and he wanted a Subaru. And so when he wasn't meeting with the people, he was actually seeing himself actually doing that. So he was telling himself it was going to happen. And then the fourth step is that you have to make that definite decision. It's kind of like you have to plant your stake in the ground. And you got to say, this is what I'm doing. And you've got to proclaim that, okay, this is my, you know, it's come hell or high water. I'm doing this thing. I'm not backing out. And so that's the, you know, four of the major mental steps we have to do to make that decision. There's other planning and planning, but I'm talking about, these are the things that we saw Thomas do. Like when he got that decision and we had the date on it, when he was going to do this thing, it was go time.
Yeah.
And so that was it. And then the other thing, the number five point that I realized is that you have to be able to figure out the specialized knowledge you need to develop to hit your goal. So we had to explain to Thomas that he was going to pass this test. He was going to have to learn the information. He was going to have to learn to drive, and he was going to have to learn to parallel park. So we had it all laid out step by step on what we had to do to do that. So we had to know what our specialized goal was. And then we had to write it out in a goal, in a plan. And so we read it out in with him, because he works, he's very simplistic. He doesn't overcomplicate everything. So we had a checklist that the next step is this, and then we click it off, and he can actually see. And you know what? I've learned to do that in my own life.
People don't realize how healthy marking things off a list feels.
Yes.
It's like even if it's simple stuff, if like you feel like you're not accomplishing things in your day, just write out what you do in a day. You get up, you make coffee, write them all out. And as you feel, you'll see how exciting it is to mark those things off because you've done things.
Well, you know, yeah, it's like a victory. It really is. It's crazy. It's that I really simplified my life because it's very busy. I know that sounds like a contradiction, but because I have so many things I need to do, because I have my New Millennial Success Academy and I have three other businesses that I run, that I have to have things very simplistic in front of me, know what my craft is, know what's my wheelhouse, and don't get caught up in the crap and the other stuff that I'm trying to do in my life. And you can do it all. You know, you just have to have good support staff, but you have to keep your life very simple. And like you said, I won't say the words, but I have this list that I call get, you know, it's a GSD list.
Yeah.
Get done.
Yep.
And there's three things every day that I have to get done the night before I plan this, that by 9 o'clock, this stuff's got to be done, along with my other morning rituals that I do, that I get up and, you know, you take time for yourself. And there's certain other things that I do in the morning. But yeah, and with Thomas, it was so important because he could see the natural progression of his goal. And then, you know, the last two is number seven is persistence. We have to develop this ability to go regardless of what happens. And how we develop that very simply is you just keep your goal in front of you and you focus on it on a daily basis, thinking about where it's going. And then the last one, it's probably the most important, is that you need to develop what's called a mastermind group. You can't do it alone. You complete the goal yourself, but you can't do it by yourself. And so you have to surround yourself with supportive people, individuals that are going to help you. And I always encourage people, I said, look, if you're trying to start a business, you can go online. In Canada, we have places like called Kijiji. I don't know if you have Kijiji down there or Craigslist or whatever. And you can find
Craigslist or Facebook has those groups.
Or Facebook groups. But I'm a big fan on one-on-one. So, you know, or groups of people where you meet with like-minded people on a bi-weekly basis, and you talk about your goals and you support one another, you give each other tips, and they help make you accountable. Because most times, I know this, I will quit if I'm doing it all by myself. But if I have a supportive group, a mastermind group, it just makes all the difference in the world.
I think the emergence of mastermind groups has filled this need that I never realized I needed. Yeah. Where I also have like four different things that I do, and I'm in mastermind groups for all of them. Right. But yeah, it's really, I mean, it's a great story, and it really makes sense. And you've turned it into a program. Do you want to tell the listeners how they can find you online, read the story absolutely. About the program?
I just take everybody to my website. Now, I created the website myself, and it's a little bit all over. I like to give a lot away of free resources and tools. So I have videos and I have tons of manuals that it's just all free content. So if you go to my website, it's www.newmillsuccess. So it's newmillsuccess.com. So it's newmillsuccess.com. And that will take you to it. And then through the tabs, you can see all the free resources we have. All the services we provide. I do a lot of keynote speaking, and I also train companies and organizations in the area of sales mindset. I have an online course there. It's called the Success Mindset Masterclass that we take people through 8 modules of taking them from not knowing where they want to go in their life and empowering them so that they look at the world and say, the world's my oyster.
Yeah.
So that we can go out and do that. So we do that. And then on the cover, you can pick up a copy of Thomas's story. It's called Thomas's Desire. Like I said, it's just a short story. It's $5 and it's a 20-minute read. And you can go to all the social media platforms and follow me too. My name's Jerry Hall. You know, it does get confused with Mick Jagger's former wife and Rupert Murdoch's current wife. But if you look for me, Jerry Hall, New Millennial Success Academy, you can find me on one of the social media things, and you can follow me along there too. And all the tags and all the links are on all my social media platforms as well.
That's awesome. Well, it's been really wonderful talking to you, and I've really loved hearing about Thomas's story and the whole mindset shift of success, how to become successful, what's the process and how that shifted in your mind after witnessing this. And I think you and your wife have probably just been like amazing parents, and there's just not enough that can be said about, you know, you got to roll with the punches when they come at you, and look at how you've raised, I'm imagining 4 successful children in their own ways. Yeah. It's really, I'm going to say a true testament to your wife, because I know what it's like to be a mama bear.
I appreciate that. And I like to say that too. Like, I get the opportunity because I'm the outgoing guy, and I get to share his story. But yeah, I've been blessed. You know, the good Lord blessed me with this incredible girl who I met when she was 11 years old and I was 12, 13 years old, tobogganing during March break. So it was incredible. But I always like to tell people this and leave them with one thing. I don't care where we come from or what we're experiencing in our life. You know, the biggest challenge we're going to have our entire life is those 6 inches between our ears. So I tell folks, I said, look, you don't have to do it yourself. Find somebody out there who cares, and, you know, talk to somebody about it, you know, and tell them your biggest fears. I have one of my closest friends is my brother. In fact, I have 3 older brothers and they're all my best friends. And you got to be willing to humble yourself and just share your deepest, darkest fears. because once you get those things out, they're not as big as you think they are. And I don't believe there's a person on this earth who can't go out there and make an incredible impact. Like I heard somebody say something once that just made my skin crawl. And I'm so excited in that. He said, he goes, you got to ask yourself, what did God love you into existence for? We're all here for a purpose. We're just not these things walking around, bumping into one another. Each and every one of us has an incredible purpose. And I found out, Thomas, it took me 25 years, but I know why. I was gifted with him 25 or 30 years ago, because he was going to change the entire course of my life and my family's life.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I'm so glad that you were here to share it with us today. And I will make sure there are links to everything everywhere. Thank you so much for coming. It's been really great talking to you.
Allison, it's been an absolute joy. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.